Hi everyone, welcome to the Smashy Business Show. I'm Wert Ahmed, and today I have one of my favorite writers with me today.
Thank you. Annika here. How are you doing today? I'm doing good. Very nervous to be here because it's been a bit, and in general, I'm not really sure how to speak about business. But yeah, let's see what happens.
We're gonna get there. You know, it's funny that you tell me I don't know how to speak about business because I hope not a lot of people are hearing this, but there was a time in my life, Annika, where I was not interested in business whatsoever.
No. Don't get me wrong. I'm very interested in business. I truly believe it's what's keeping the world running right now, you know. But I just don't know if I'm wise enough to comment on it, you know.
I think you are. I think you are. You just have to trust what you're saying because, you know, we discuss entrepreneurs a lot here. We always speak about them. And actually, what makes all their businesses special is because of their different outlooks on life. Their different outlooks on business.
That's so interesting.
No, seriously.
That is very interesting.
It's the way that they lead with things that decides what... It's the way that they lead with things that decides what kind of business that they're actually going to have. Like, for example, like I hear some entrepreneurs, they say that, you know, my business, it's in my employees. I treat my employees well, my business is going to go well. And then, you know, you have others who are like, crunch down, crunch time, I got to go down on it. No, I'm being serious. Like, they think that if they, like, if they enforce a very strong form of discipline, their business is going to be successful. So no, actually, whatever you say might actually be wise. But I want to know, how is your day? How are you doing?
My day was good. But actually, speaking about your whole business and entrepreneurial and the mindset, so and so, I want to talk to you about this post that I came across. So there's there's a content creator I follow on Instagram. And she... Because New Year is coming and, you know, all the content is going into becoming a new person, so and so. She actually put up a reel talking about how at the beginning of this year, she was struggling with, like, her physical health, her mental health. She was trying to be an entrepreneur but also trying to become a content creator. And it was not going well, like... it was too many things on her plate and she couldn't focus. And now, like with that reel, she announced that she was stopping her entrepreneurial venture. And she's going into full-time content creation. I feel, I don't know how to feel about this because I know that sometimes a lot of people, like if you look at Huda Beauty, for example, started a brand and then went into content creation. Whereas... So this is like going the whole reverse route, you know. You're becoming a content creator first and then what, maybe eventually down the line you start a brand, do something
on your
own. Do you
know what her brand is or like her name?
I think she was doing a content... I don't know if I want to mention her name. Should I?
Yes, of course.
Okay, okay. Shout out to Noor. Noorul Ain. She... she's a Pakistani content creator if I'm not wrong. And... She, so she actually had a content creation thing on the side. Content creation agency. So she would make reels for brands. And now she stopped. She said she let go of her last client and she's no longer going to focus on making reels for other companies. She's just going to do that for herself and her brand, her content. So I'm just, so first of all, my question is, at this point, we've reached this point in social media where content creation itself has become sort of an entrepreneurial venture, haven't we?
Yes, I think that's why she quit. She quit her, her company. Because if you think about it, man, she was doing the same thing.
She was doing two businesses, essentially.
But are the same thing. Like, she's making reels for herself, and she's making reels for clients. You know what I think happened here? She got sick of writing for them. She got sick of making reels for them. She wanted to make it for herself.
Yeah, she said she wasn't able to focus her energy on making the content she wanted to make for herself. You know?
This is so interesting.
I just feel like we're looking at content creation itself as like this little cute little thing of like girls going in front of the camera and like, you know, pointing at text and making fun videos and dancing. That's the fun part of content creation. But then there's also like the back end, like, you know, drafting the content, creating the idea, coming out with the hook. And also, if you're dealing with brands, getting the payment on time, making sure you've got payment, doing invoices, banking, everything. All of those things. And that itself, and like, you know, or like pitching to brands, pitching ideas. You're essentially a full functioning business all on your own.
You know, I remember there was this, I went to this one event. It was actually, it was an event at Eucerin for the launch of this new serum that they had. Mm-hmm. And that was actually one of my like first big industry event where I wasn't seeing celebrities. I was seeing influencers and influencers at their best. Like all, it was crazy, Annika, all the influencers from the UAE were at this event. Mm. All of them were there. And can I tell you something? These people weren't having fun, man. You're right. It is a business to them. They weren't having fun. They weren't talking to people. You know what they were doing? Can you get the lighting out? Man, we really need to take this photo properly.
Yeah.
We need to get footage of
you
this.
You do not want to come in between. That.
And then I met one of my favorite influencers. You know Natasha Aris? Mm-hmm. Oh, she's such a sweetheart. And the reason why I mentioned she's a sweetheart is because she's dead drop gorgeous. And honestly, sometimes with the internet, when I see a dead drop gorgeous girl, I'm thinking, are you Regina George? Are you? Ooh. You might be. But when I met her, she was really sweet. Aww. I met some of them who are mean, real life.
Of course.
You know, you don't want to always meet your heroes. But Natasha Addy, she was really sweet. And you know what she was telling me? She's like, I need to shoot something for Eucerin. And actually, Charlotte Tilbury is here. I need to go downstairs and shoot something for her.
Ooh.
Imagine.
So much.
Imagine
so much.
Two brands at the same time that she needs to shoot for. Wow, it really has become a business.
It is a you're business, not, I think. Right. Because you're making money out of it.
Yeah.
So it becomes a business. Mm. Not an easy one, because a lot of times, because you not only have to deal with people telling you so, you're just recording videos and you get to go for events for free and eat free food, but you're also handling so many other things.
You know, it's so interesting, kudos. Annika, that you mentioned that, you know, you get to go to events for free and you get things for free. You know, just very recently, I was told by someone that always be careful of the gifts that you receive.
Nothing is free.
In this industry.
Nothing is free.
Yes, she literally nailed it. Nothing is free because they'll give it to you and then like give them like a day, give them a week, give them a month, and they'll be like, hey, can you make this little video for us?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a hidden bribe. You just don't notice
100%,
it. 100%,
it is a bribe. PR gifts are a bribe. Mm. They're telling you to do something for them. They're telling you, keep me in mind. Mm. They're telling you. But like, it's a bribe, or you can even see it as a form of payment. But a lot of people get annoyed because they're like, it's not payment. Mm. It doesn't, like, your chocolates don't pay my rent.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. But also, at the same time, I don't know. It's each one to their own.
No, you're right. It is business. It is each to their own. And it's like, okay, like for example, like someone who I can think of who I really, really love, Twinkle. Twinkle is a UAE-based influencer.
Twinkle stand,
and she just very recently, and she's been vlogging it for us. She's Indian and she quit Cosmo to fully focus on her internet personality career. And for her, I genuinely feel like it's working out because she's enjoying it and she loves the freedom that it gives her. However, you know, when I go back to the story of, you know, the lady quitting her business of making reels for people, I get it, Annika, and you know I get it because of the fact that I'm a writer and I sometimes freelance write for people. Mm-hmm. So I do like branding work, you know, about pages, things like that. And what basically happened to me is I started hating it because in my brain, I'm writing for you. I'm not writing for myself.
Yeah.
Of course, you're going to start hating it when you're doing something that's a passion that you have, but you're doing it for other people so they can be, you're not going to love it that much.
I heard a while ago, you should never make your hobby your passion. Like, you should never make your passion your career.
That's deep. That's
like, keep
so
them
deep.
Separate.
I so agree with you because I really started hating it. But at the same time, though, I would say that I've reached a point, Annika, where because of the fact that I'm writing every single day, writing is not as stressful as it used to be for me. Like, I don't sit there, like, stressed. Like, will the idea come to me? Will it? It just comes. It comes.
Yeah, it build a discipline.
Right?
Writing is more a discipline.
I so agree with you. But can you expand on that?
It's just a discipline. You don't sit to write, writing is more like a training. You have to train yourself. Like with any skill, you have to sit at your computer every day and go like, I'm not going to leave this place until I finish writing 500 words.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no matter what 500 words, if it's a bad 500 words,
it's horrible.
If it's the greatest lines you've ever written, Shakespeare himself is jealous of you. Doesn't matter. You need to be able to write 500 words.
Yeah.
And then you get up. And like when you consistently do that over a period of time, it compounds and. Mm. You know, no. Every sentence counts. You're building towards something.
Yeah, I agree with you. And now just going back to our main topics for the day. Number one, we have Saudi Arabia. Now, Saudi Arabia has temporarily halted its bid for full membership in BRICS, the economic bloc of emerging powers, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, as well as recent additions like Egypt, the UAE, and Iran. Now, despite this, the kingdom plans to continue engaging with the group, which seeks to counterbalance Western economic dominance. Saudi Arabia's decision in this is specifically strategically aligning with the Balancing Act in global alliances, navigating relationships with both BRICS and Western nations.
Now, I know that this is a very important story because it's highlighting how Saudi Arabia is trying not to go into either side. Because if you align with the BRICS, the U.S. administration is going to see it as more of like an against them kind of a movement. So this move, it's a good reflection of Saudi Arabia's foreign policy approach. You know, it avoids full alignment with the BRICS while maintaining an influence still in the bloc. Because BRICS right now is it's being seen as kind of going against the U.S. in some sense because they want to reduce the dependency on the U.S. dollar, which is something they've been talking about for a while.
Yeah, and you have China there.
Yeah.
And the only...
China and Russia.
Yeah, and so the only country that rivals America's GDP is China. So they're the most powerful, both of them.
Exactly. So, you know, this is Saudi Arabia's pause can be seen as an attempt to sidestep geopolitical risks. Mm. And because Saudi Arabia is also such a such an ally of the U.S., you know.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not... it's definitely a more strategic diplomatic decision taken by Saudi Arabia itself to keep flexible... help its economy. And I think you can't blame them. You have to, as a country, you have to look out for yourself. You have
to look
out for your interests.
Of course.
This seems like the most viable option. Why make bad blood?
But you know, Annika, when I see this story, I don't see it as just them looking out for their interest because of the fact that, you know, we're constantly hearing that Saudi Arabia has this 2030 plan where they're trying to diversify.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm seeing here is a country that is standing alone and wants to stand alone and wants to become that power.
Interesting.
I
yes,
don't necessarily.
Exactly.
I see your point, and I think it's a really good point. But I don't necessarily see them as trying to side with anybody.
Yeah.
I just see them as trying to develop such a strong self-reliance, and already, you know, they have Aramco. You know.
Yeah.
One of the biggest. Exactly, biggest and one of the best oil producers in the world, and you know, with their diversification plan, I think. It really stems from that, them wanting to stand alone, you know, because I always say this to Majid, Annika, when countries rely on other countries, it doesn't always work out.
Like our conversation with the PRs, no gift is for free. Nothing is for free. So when you rely on yourself as a country, it's much better.
It's
much better
so
for you.
Bad. And like we even saw it in the UK because of the Ukrainian crisis.
Mm.
The UK didn't, I mean, the European Union, they didn't want to rely on the oil from Russia. So what did they do? They had to go to Qatar and they had to rely on their liquid natural gas.
Mm.
And then what happened? Because of the fact that they were actually, because they have this policy, Annika, where it's the net zero policy in the European Union. If you trade with them, and you're trading in something that's harming the environment, you get taxed 5% on the revenue that you make. But they're purchasing the oil that's ruining the environment, and they're taxing people. What ended up happening is that, I forgot which figure it was, but they actually threatened to cut off their supply of gas to the European Union. So you see that reliance. You see what that reliance creates. So in this case, what I see it as is there's going to come a point, and that point is already here, really, where Saudi Arabia doesn't rely on anybody.
Literally,
And I think that's really what it's a part of.
Yeah, and now their tourism is boosting.
Yeah.
Everything is coming up, and by 2030, definitely.
And their startup ecosystem, we hear about it every single day.
So much.
So many startups. So much is coming. And now for our second topic of the day, the UAE has actually become the top investor in Africa, number one.
Speaking of key players in the Middle East.
Yeah. And so essentially between 2019 and 2023, UAE companies committed a staggering $110 billion to new projects in Africa, with $72 billion focused on renewable energy. That is, these are insane numbers.
Yeah.
Insane, really, really big numbers. And when I take a look at this, it's like I'm seeing the UAE's appetite. I'm seeing their appetite. They want to be everywhere, and they want to be number one everywhere.
It's very interesting. It's very fun. It's a very fun time. Yeah, because it's for some reason it reminds me of the oil boom, which happened in the 1900s.
Yeah.
When the oil boom was coming up, that was also a time when the UAE is like, okay, we've got this new lease of life. Let's take it and run. And they did. And now that they're trying to diversify from oil, you know, they're going into new things. They're making new investments in new places. They're spreading their wings, really coming up as an empire.
Yeah, you're right. And it's not, you know, like you said, like new places. This is not any place. This is Africa.
It's the wealth, new continent.
but the wealth in Africa, Annika, it is not discussed enough. It's not discussed enough. And the few people that know it, they know the power that's in Africa. And it's, I remember there was a saying that came out, I believe, in the Sky News Arabia. Sudan specifically was actually coined as Salat Ghaza al-Alam, meaning that the breadbasket of the world that could feed the entire world. The agriculture in Africa, the gold in Africa that they have, everything that they have, it's absolutely beautiful. I'll tell you this right now, Annika. This is just my personal opinion coming in. Have you ever gone to Africa, by the way?
I did have, yeah.
No way! Yeah, what did you visit?
I went to Kenya.
Me too!
For a safari. Ooh. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Oh my God.
It was
God.
Beautiful. There's something in African skies.
I know.
But you were telling me very passionately about Africa. What were you saying?
No, but Africa, like if you, because I've been to Kenya, I've been to Sudan. Mm. My next goal is Egypt.
Oh,
it's my dream to go to Egypt. It really is, because I love history. Or even the artifacts in Africa, everything that they have, their history, it's so rich. And when you go to Africa, it's the food
there.
Oh,
the food is amazing.
The food, it's because the water, everything there, it's so
fresh.
Organic, it's so fresh, it's amazing. But like, you know, when I think of Africa and its history, it saddens me, because I don't know if you know this, but you know, slavery, what actually began it is that Africans were selling their own people. Mm. They're the ones who started selling their own people.
Well,
that's
they were
began.
The birthplace of civilization. So it makes sense that everything starts from there, including the practice of slavery.
Yeah.
It makes me sad, because I just wish that, because we know that right now at this point, Africa is in urgent need for energy transition funding, infrastructure, all of that. Even when I went to Kenya, I remember seeing a lot of the railway and everything was being constructed not by African companies, but by China.
Ooh,
so,
interesting.
Yeah, I remember my tour guide jokingly telling me that China has kind of taken over a lot of Kenya. Like a lot of the infrastructure, a lot of the development. He was like, okay, I see my country progressing, so that's great, but it's just that I don't see my people progressing.
Ooh.
The country is like, maybe it's getting better in terms of tourism, in terms of infrastructure, but the people remain in the same cycles of poverty. And like, you know, because, so I think that's why it's very important to be careful with
of
these
course.
Investments, you know, like make sure it reaches to the people there.
Yeah.
But
you know, Annika, the economist Dambisa Moyo said it best. Aid is dead. It's dead aid.
Yeah.
It's such dead aid, because what happens in African countries is that when, you know, they get aid, it's such an it's very unfortunate to express, but there are always there's always corruption there. And what ends up happening is that that aid, it's used for ideological purposes, it's used for corrupt purposes, and the people don't actually receive that aid. They don't receive it. And what ends up happening, it's that they're constantly getting this capital pool from, you know, Western countries, but it's not actually benefiting the people. Like, I remember I was reading into it, and there was this case of a lot of African leaders using, getting aid, and then you know what they were using it for? I forgot the leader's name, but he used the aid that he received to throw his daughter a wedding in an island in the Caribbean. Yeah.
Nice.
I know. Nice for them, but not for the not for the people. And even recently, actually, I'm not sure if it was 2022 or 2023, but it was reported that in Congo there was this huge scandal where potentially $6 million was lost. And essentially what happened, it was an entire aid scheme.
Okay.
So they were receiving aid, and it was meant to help the people that were being displaced in Congo due to conflict. And what happened is that the aid was being stolen. Mm. It wasn't just being stolen by the country itself. It was actually being stolen by the people responsible for distributing it. Mm. Yeah, they were being blackmailed. And not just that, people would come in and say that they have issues. They'd lie. Like, oh, we're displaced, we have this, and the money would be given to them. And the people who, and I remember I was, oh, it made me so emotional, Annika. I was reading the reviews, the people from Congo, and they were saying, you know, this aid, like, it's not reaching us. It hasn't done anything for us. So, you know, we're yet to see the potential that Africa is going to achieve. We've really yet to see it. And I can't wait to see it. I really can't wait to see it. And now for our final topic for today, Wahed Ventures, the $500 million venture capital arm of Aramco, has led a $5 million investment in Yinmo, a Saudi-based platform focused on improving educational and rehabilitative services for children, particularly those with disabilities. Now, this funding round, it also included Qatar Development Bank and Noor Nouf Ventures. So founded in 2017, Yinmo leverages AI to provide customized rehabilitation programs and consultations for families, aiming to enhance access to quality care and education across the Gulf region.
That's so cool. It's very important. It really shows how the Middle East, at least, or the Gulf especially, is trying to be more... more diversity inclusive, more inclusive in general about its services, especially disability services, because, you know, Yinmo is the education and rehabilitative service provider, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just a beautiful a bridging of a gap, you know, because when we work with technology, it is not always the most inclusive.
Mm.
So something like this, especially for children, is great.
It's great. And you know, when I specifically read this, Annika, it makes me so emotional because my brother has autism.
Oh.
Yeah, my brother has autism. He has something, it's called Landau-Kleffner syndrome.
Okay.
And what it is that as someone ages, their ability for speech goes down.
Oh,
so he doesn't
okay.
express himself in the way that we do, in words. Mm-hmm. And actually, the entire reason, by luck, that I live in this country, that I'm here in this chair today, it's because of my brother. Because I could have done my schooling and my education in Sudan. And actually, in Sudan, you have a higher chance of getting into Ivy Leagues. Because your plea case of, you know, coming from a country in Africa, it's easier for you to get in. But the entire reason why me and my family, we live here, it's for our brother. It's because my parents actually found education for him here.
Yeah.
It's so, especially in the UAE, they're so supportive of people with disabilities, people who are special needs. My parents could not find a single school in Sudan for my brother. Not a single school like the one that they found here called Safe Center. And they basically, they provide a lot of services, and even the speech therapist that he had, it was all here.
Mm.
And you know, we don't realize it sometimes because maybe we don't go through it. But, you know, things like what Wahed Ventures is doing, especially like trying to, you know, leverage AI to create these programs. My brother is obsessed with technology, by the way. obsessed. I don't know what it is, but ever since I was a kid, and he even does it sometimes in front of people. Like, if he sees a stranger holding his phone, he'll go up to them. Oh. And I look at him, I'm like, come on, like, take my phone. Don't do that. But he's obsessed with technology. Like, the way my parents would make him happy is that my brother, when the first iPad actually came out, he was the first person to receive it.
Wow.
Because my father works in tech, and he found a way to get it for him. But just knowing how much kids with special needs actually love technology, to see that WAD Ventures is doing this, it's leveraging AI, especially such a new tool that's only at its like beginning stages. They've already utilized it, and they're going to do more with it to improve education for people with disabilities, people with special needs. It's more important than ever, because we don't realize it, because we were talking about this yesterday. Remember when you were saying that we're so privileged and entitled?
And I didn't say we're entitled. I said we're privileged.
Oh, yeah. what's it called? We were having this discussion, and I heard entitled and privileged and immediately said I'm not, because I heard the word entitled first. But Annika was saying, like, we're so privileged. We're so privileged, and we don't realize that there are other countries. They don't provide what WAD Ventures is doing. They don't. Yeah. They don't provide it whatsoever.
But, you know, just to be the little pinch of salt in your soup.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, because I know that, I don't know if you remember, there were those reports when AI came out about how AI is incapable of differentiating different skin tones,
Ooh.
Different nationalities. So, for example, they're more receptive to the Caucasian male face or the Caucasian
Ooh.
Female, whereas like they're not very capable of sensing or detecting like an Indian face, maybe, or an Asian face. I just hope, and that's why that is one of the main flags they put up when they go, or like when a country says they're going to use AI for facial recognition technology, you know, to locate your face in a crowd, because it's naturally that the AI would go to faces that it doesn't recognize. So like an Asian face like mine, maybe. You know,
and
making
that does
it
pose
more
a danger of some
yes,
sort.
Dangerous. But I'm pretty sure that things have been flagged, so they might be working on it. But I'm not really sure, actually.
No, but by the way, let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia, it is accommodating for that. Just very
really?
Recently, I read, not necessarily with the skin color. I haven't read anything specifically about that, but with the language. With the language itself,
yes.
They are developing AI tools that are completely in Arabic to accommodate for the Saudi population. And I mentioned language because language, it's my Arabic is as close to me as is my skin. It's something so important to me. So when I read into that and the fact that they're accommodating for that and they're providing these tools, it's happening, Annika. They're on the move. It's happening. We'll get there, but you concerned me, because if it's spotting, no, seriously, you did. If it's spotting faces it doesn't recognize, then maybe certain people will be blamed for things they didn't do.
I am. I'm just looking through, actually, on the web for insight into this, because I don't just want to say anything.
Yeah, but while Annika is looking for that, just to give you guys more context, so Yamnu actually plans to scale its operations across the Gulf, and it plans to introduce new platform features, and it actually is it's planning an expansion. So this is not just going to be in Saudi Arabia. They're also trying to expand their themselves into Qatar. So soon enough, these services that they provide that are so amazing for people with special needs, for people with disabilities, they're going to be all over the Gulf. They're going to be everywhere. Did you find it?
Which is cool.
Yeah.
what I do see is that I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm seeing... You know when you do those AI, you ask an AI chatbot to create images of, like, let's say, Emirati women.
Yeah.
Or, and like, the images that they do create.
Did.
No, I didn't. But, like, any time you see those videos of, like, we asked AI to create images of, like, Emirati women or, like, you know, some woman. Have you noticed that this one is usually very fair? Their skin tone is usually fair. Or let's say you ask AI to...
Just did it. Let's find out, yeah. Man.
Or you ask AI to, like, depict an Emirati woman. The idea that AI will show you usually is, like, sand and camels, when we know that the UAE has progressed much further.
Oh, my God. She is right. She is absolutely right. It just gave me white woman, but with a hijab.
Yeah, with camels in the background, maybe. Or sand, desert.
It was
anything?
A masjid in buildings, actually.
Masjid and buildings.
This is advanced ChatGPT.
Okay, sorry, and the fact, my bad.
No. No, I actually mentioned that it's advanced ChatGPT, the one that is paid for, because they gave me white woman with, like, a really horrible contour.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So you see how, like, AI is incapable of, like, and, like, let's say you go, like, so if the minute you go, like, show her in Dubai or, like, show her in the UAE, it's usually something, it's very stereotypical. It's a very, like, a one-story narrative, which is very dangerous, because it, you know, that is my fear with AI, the fact that it sticks to the stereotypes. But that is only right now, and we're still in the beginner stages, so...
Oh my God, Anika, take a look at this.
What's
so basically
happening?
I searched up, the search was ChatGPT create AI images of Emirati women in the UAE. Don't they look white?
They do.
They do look white.
That's the thing, so it doesn't allow.
And speaking of the features that, sorry for cutting you off. Speaking of the features that you said, it gave them really ugly noses. And I have a lot of Emirati best friends, and they are so beautiful. And they don't, do you see the noses? Do you see what's wrong with the faces? Do you see it? Do you recognize it?
Yeah.
They even made them ugly. They gave them ugly noses. And then I wrote here, wait, let me show you. ChatGPT, create AI images of white women. And look at them. Look at them. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that is my fear with AI. This precisely, this whole, this inability to... You know, differentiate and respect the diversity.
Yeah, the race war isn't over.
I feel like we as human beings are still struggling to learn it. So imagine technology is going to, like, technology being programmed by these humans. It's going to take a lot more time. One can only wait and hope for the best.
Whoa. I'm sorry, I actually never knew this, because I never asked ChatGPT to create images for me.
Yeah.
So I really just never did this. But even
this
I've
is
noticed,
one of the reasons I stopped asking ChatGPT to create images.
You know, even Anika, I've noticed something. When I ask ChatGPT, like, a certain question about, like, a story or, like, a news story, I just want a bit of context for myself. I noticed that it always leads with the white perspective. Mm-hmm. And you know how I noticed that back when I was an intern and... I was just trying to work very quickly and finish things quickly. I'd ask ChatGPT for help, and I would take its narrative. And do you know what would happen? I'd read it in the comment sections, and the comment sections would say, this is a very Western perspective. And then I'd sit there and I'd reflect on it, and I'm like, that is true.
Yeah.
You don't realize it in the moment because you're reading it. You're trying to find the fact. But the way that it's phrased, wow.
Do you know what is an amazing thing? Even ChatGPT can tell that Palestine should be free.
Amen. Amen to that. Amen to that.
Yeah, they and actually finally able to learn that, because someone asked ChatGPT, can you do your research and tell me who's wrong or, like, what's happening?
Yep. Wow. You know what? I'm gonna start experimenting with it more, because this just, wow, I never knew this. But thank you so much for being here today,
it's
Anika.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for gracing us with your interesting views.
Oh, thank you for, I learned a lot from you too.
I learned a lot from you today. But with that being said, thank you so much for watching, everyone.
I hope you were able to learn something from us.
Yes, this is the Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production under the Augustus Media Podcast Network. You can find our newsletter on Smashy TV, and you can always find us, as always, on X, on Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Thank you for watching. Have a lovely, lovely Friday.
Bye-bye.